Support comes from Empower Missouri's Affordable Housing Coalition, working to address the causes of housing insecurity and homelessness through tenant advocacy. Information at empowermissouri.org/housing.
Illinois' 13th District is a rematch from 2018 between Republican incumbent Congressman Rodney Davis and Democratic challenger Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. Like in 2018, healthcare is dominating the conversation, and Dirksen-Londrigan is sticking to much of the same playbook in 2020, claiming Davis and other Republicans are putting Americans at risk of losing their healthcare coverage, specifically those with pre-existing conditions. 2018 was a tough battle, and it's the same in 2020 in this nationally targeted House race. In this episode of Politically Speaking, we spoke with Dirksen-Londrigan about why she believes she's better for the district. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
It's a little complicated in Bolivar because there is a Parsons family there.
But we also knew that it was important to make sure that we got to where we needed to go.
You know, if you walk in a room and you're getting ready to make a decision and everybody in the room looks like you, you need to stop.
And right now what happens in the United States Senate is as critical as anywhere else in the country.
I really want the state to succeed.
Well, we want everybody to know that we're all working together.
I just worked hard to try to build my name where I didn't have the money.
Welcome to Politically Speaking. I am your guest host, St. Louis State House reporter Jacqueline Driscoll. Joining me today is our Metro East reporter,
Eric Schmid.
And also joining us today via Zoom is the Democratic challenger in Illinois' 13th District. Our guest today is
Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, and I am very happy to be here.
Thank you so much. So Eric and I taped our conversation with the Republican incumbent, Congressman Rodney Davis. Last week, he is seeking his fifth term in office. Eric will be covering this race more closely, so make sure you follow him to get any details on that. But as I mentioned last week, and I think I mentioned every time I've been on the podcast, I am an Illinois native. Illinois 13th is my home, and I had the pleasure of covering this race back in 2018, and it was an exciting one. It was actually called early on. CNN called it in favor of Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. Then they had to reverse course. It was a tight race. Congressman Rodney Davis only won by 1 point. So my first question to you, Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, why did you decide to get back in this race again?
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you, Jacqueline and Eric, for having me today. I got back in 2020 because people still need help. And, you know, I got into the race to protect healthcare. It's what motivated me to run it in the first place. I got in because I saw our, you know, current representative, Rodney Davis, and he was celebrating on the White House lawn with President Trump and a bunch of people. And he was celebrating that they had passed a HCA out of the House, which would have kicked millions of people off insurance. It would have gutted protections for people with pre-existing conditions. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, like, do these people not know what this is going to do to families, or do they not care? And I do know, and I do care. That's why I got in, because my husband and I also are both born and raised here in Central Illinois, and we have three kids. And when our oldest son was 12, he got bit by a tick, and he ended up in the pediatric intensive care unit of our children's hospital here in Springfield. And he was unbelievable. He was very, very sick. And he ended up in surgery, and then they had to put him into a medically induced coma, and he had a ventilator that was breathing for him. And he was actually read last rites, not once, but twice. And it was terrifying. And we are incredibly fortunate because that medical team saved his life every minute of every day for so long. And ultimately, we were able to take our boy home and start a very long road to recovery. And there is not a day that goes by that I am not keenly aware of how fortunate we are to have access to good care, because if we had not had that access, I would be a mom of two and not three. And if we hadn't had good insurance, it would have bankrupted our family. And so for me, getting into the fight to protect healthcare has been a primary motivator. All through 2018 and in this cycle too, healthcare is the overarching issue.
So building off of that, I mean, you just said it, healthcare is the overarching issue. It's the dominating discussion in this race. And you've come out in support of something that is known as Medicare X. Can you explain that in more detail? What does it look like?
Sure. Well, I think it's important to, you know, to make sure that we have a clear understanding of my priorities. I have always prioritized, number one, protecting the Affordable Care Act. Representative Davis has voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act with no replacement 11 times. I want to protect it. I want to build on it. I want to strengthen it. I want to expand it. My goal is to make sure that every person has access to quality, affordable care. And what's happened in some of our, you know, areas, particularly in our rural communities, is that providers have left. And so prices, you know, for insurance have gone up. And so it's about how can we bring some competition into those markets and lower the costs. And any Medicare, so the plan you're talking about is a Medicare public option. And the reason that I want to look at the public option is because we could actually work with the hospitals to make sure that they can maintain their excellent standard of care. And can we then provide some competition in those markets and bring the costs down? Making sure that everyone has access to quality, affordable care is my absolute number one priority. And that's what I intend to do.
I want to touch on the ACA because we are in a very important time for the ACA. As many know, not long after the election, the Supreme Court will decide on its constitutionality. But I do believe that, and I think it's fair to say that the ACA has its faults. It does leave out some Americans. There are issues with the ACA. How do we build on that? How do we make it better when it's kind of, you know, it's garnered this political response? You know, many people refer to it as Obamacare. It's something that President Trump campaigned against for so long. It kind of seems, you know, less about healthcare and more about politics. So how do we improve on a plan that has become so polarizing?
I think, you know, Jacqueline, you bring up a good point, and it shouldn't be polarizing. It shouldn't be partisan to understand that people should be able to get to a doctor when they need one. They should be able to afford their prescription drugs. And, you know, remember, you know, the ACA was always supposed to be a first step. And I hear from people, you know, about the parts that aren't working for them. One of those parts that isn't working are sometimes the costs associated with getting that care. Now, you know, I think in late summer, the House actually passed a bill to try to address some of those costs and to change some of the formulas because, you know, people who are very low income can qualify for Medicaid here in Illinois. But people who are on the market who are just above sort of that level, you know, the cost for them can be really prohibitive. So how do we address that? So the House actually passed something called the Affordable Care Enhancement Act to address those costs and bring them down so that more families qualify for subsidies to get the care on the market. That's something I would support. That's something that Representative Davis also voted against.
Looking at the number of people who are on the ACA in the 13th district, I mean, from the numbers that are publicly available most recently, it's only about 20,000 people. But when you look more closely, the majority of them fall between 100% or 250% of the federal poverty line. And when you break that down into real numbers, that's about at most $65,000 a year annually for a family of three, which isn't entirely unreasonable for many of your constituents. This puts them in a vulnerable context. And I just wanted to ask, how do you ensure their safety and protection when we're seeing that this is something that is under threat by a case going to the Supreme Court? How do you ensure the safety of these people who are vulnerable, who do need this health coverage?
What you're talking about, and what Jacqueline has briefly mentioned too, is you're talking about 1 week after Election Day on November 10th, the Supreme Court is going to hear a case to completely overturn the Affordable Care Act and all of the essential health benefits that go along with it. This is something that the Trump administration has supported. This is something that Representative Davis voted to support three times. And it could devastate people's lives. Not only the, you know, the folks that you're talking about, but I want you to consider for a minute that if the ACA gets overturned, that people with pre-existing conditions will once again be they can be discriminated against. And we have over 282,000 people here in Central Illinois, in Illinois 13, with pre-existing conditions. And that number is before COVID. What are those numbers going to be when this is said and done? So making sure that we elect people who are committed to protecting healthcare, to passing laws to make sure that people can't afford their insurance, that they can get the insurance, that they cannot be discriminated against. It has to be a priority. And that's why healthcare is on the ballot on November 3rd. And in Illinois 13, people are going to have a real clear choice. You know, the whole reason I'm in this race is to protect healthcare, build it, strengthen it, make sure every person has access to quality, affordable care. In contrast, Representative Davis has made it a mission to repeal the Affordable Care Act. He's bragged about it, he's celebrated it, and he has voted no less than 11 times to repeal it with no replacement, which would devastate people.
I do want to ask one more quick question about the Medicare X plan. Congressman Davis says Medicare X, the plans, the ideas that you support, is going to force rural hospitals to close their doors. Is that true?
Medicare, the public option is there are parts of it that, like, some versions can work, some versions aren't going to work. And I am only going to support a version that works with the hospitals to make sure that they can maintain their excellent standard of care. But this is also an effort by Representative Davis to distract people from, again, the 11 times he voted to repeal the ACA with no replacement. He voted to gut Medicaid funding. Those rural hospitals rely on Medicaid funding to keep their doors open. So every one of those 11 times that he voted that way, He voted risking closures of those very rural hospitals.
So jumping forward to something that is related to healthcare, as we have mentioned before, the coronavirus pandemic, COVID-19. Yeah. Very first off, do you feel like the national response was strong enough to keep Americans safe, to keep your constituents safe? Should there have been a mask mandate? Should there have been other policies in place? And that's especially in the context now that we're seeing parts of this region, the Midwest, see larger numbers of new coronavirus cases.
I think what we have seen from this administration with regard to the coronavirus has been an utter failure in leadership. I mean, just like everybody else, I was shocked to hear President Trump in his own words say he knew this virus was deadly. He knew it was airborne. He knew it was much deadlier than the flu. And he knew it in early February and repeatedly lied to the American people about what it was and how severe it could be. And not only was he lying to us about it, but there was no national plan. There still is no national plan. And that is a failure in leadership. You know, we actually have what I think is a role model at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, where they have tested, you know, they developed their own testing, their own tracing. They worked with the Department of Public Health and the scientists and the researchers and the community, and everybody came together. And they have now tested over 600,000 individuals. You know, the students are back on campus, the businesses are open, they have a rolling positivity rate. I think for the last week or so, it's less than 0.25%. I look at that and I think that's what a plan is. That's what a plan should look like. And we have not had that at the federal level. Now we have over 30 million people out of work. We have small businesses that are shuttered. That is a failure in leadership. And we have a Congress that is not listening to working families. I hear from people every day, and they feel like they are on this economic cliff where they're trying to make decisions between, are they going to, you know, pay their mortgage or their car payment? Because they don't think they can do both and put groceries in the refrigerator. You know, Congress needs to be extending unemployment insurance. They need to be refilling the coffers of the payment protection program with oversight to make sure that, because I do believe that we are going to get to the other side of this pandemic, but we need to make sure our families and our small businesses are still afloat when we get there. And in order to get there, we have to have a plan for testing and tracing and protective gear. You know, workers want to get back to work. Teachers want to get back in the classroom. Students want to get back in school. And we have to have a plan to do that so that we can get our economy back up and running.
I'm sorry, one more, just to follow up on Eric's question. So he did ask at the end there, do you believe there should be a mask mandate? Should that be a part of the national plan?
I think that if, you know, let's listen to the science. If that's what the science says that can help us get our economy back up and running, then I think that we need to consider that. That by itself isn't going to do it. And there has to be a lot more, that has to be a lot more to it. But, you know, we need everybody coming together to the table to develop what this plan is going to look like and how it's going to be implemented. And it needs to be led by science.
Now, I wanted to ask about evictions, because there's an eviction moratorium both in place for the state of Illinois and from the federal government. They protect different classes of renters. And I guess the thing is that when these eviction moratoriums run out, from my reporting, tenants are still on the hook to pay rent that was due during the pandemic when they either lost a job or they couldn't find a way to make that payment up. That could be thousands of dollars in many cases. So what would you do in Congress? What will you do in Congress should you be elected to help address this issue for not just tenants, but also their landlords who might be hurting also and might have mortgage payments that depend on that rent?
Well, in order for us to get our economy back up and running, we have to invest back into our people. And just like in what you're hearing about, Eric, is what I am hearing about. People are not, they're still not able to go to work. You know, it's wonderful that they can't get evicted, but they're not going to have thousands of dollars to be able to make that back pay. So how are we going to do that? We have to get money into people's pockets. And I think it's important for, you know, I think this gets lost in the discussion a lot, that this is taxpayer money. You know, it's not, you know, government money. It's taxpayer money. And taxpayers should be deciding how this money is being spent. And they have to do that through their representatives. But for me, it's about prioritizing our people, our families, our, you know, how are we going to get people back to work? How are we going to make sure they're still afloat? And that means making sure that we're getting money back into their pockets, both the renters and the landlords, the homeowners and the non-homeowners. And we also need to make sure that they have income coming in, you know, and that means if we want them to get back to work, then we have to, you know, this comes right back to having a plan. We've got to have testing and tracing and protective gear. We need to get our economy reopened safely.
We'll be right back after this break with Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back with Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan talking about Illinois' 13th district race. We have been talking about healthcare, which has dominated the conversation in this race so far, as well as some discussion surrounding coronavirus, but I want to move into another important topic, and that is the idea of police reform and ending systemic racism. We are at a very unique and critical moment in our history after the killing of George Floyd sparked national protests. So I posed this question to Congressman Davis, so I'm going to do the same for you. Many are calling for police reform and working to end systemic racism that does still exist in our society. If you were elected, what would you like to see done? What would you do in order to take steps to improving this?
So let's break that down a little bit. Let's start with police reform and the horror that all of us saw this summer with George Floyd being murdered on all of our screens. And I was very proud, you know, to take part in peaceful protests around Central Illinois. You know, here in Springfield, there was a Black Lives Matter rally. It was a car rally. And there were over 3,000 cars in that rally. There were protests that were organized by 15 and 16-year-olds. And, you know, to me, it was about what happened to George Floyd, but it was also about so much more. And so focusing in on police reform, we absolutely do need reform to our law enforcement. We do need to do things like ban chokeholds, but we also need to make sure that we're reforming some of the training, the implicit bias training. We need crisis intervention training. And we also need to make sure that we are providing some of the tools that officers need. Now, I've talked to sheriffs around Central Illinois who would welcome mental health and addiction professionals to their team, because they have said to me, they said, Betsy, you know, we're not trained for this. And, you know, they have jails that are full of people. And are they full of, you know, people who have committed crimes? Or are they full of people who have had a mental health crisis or addiction? And the officers aren't trained to deal with those. So let's make sure that we're giving them the tools they need and recognize that not every 911 call deserves, you know, it needs an armed response. And, you know, in addition to those kinds of reforms, we also need to, you know, demilitarize some of our local police departments. And, you know, we can work together on those things. We have to. But if we stop there, then I really feel like we're missing the bigger message that people have been, you know, raising their voices about all summer long. And that's a systemic racism, which has tentacles in every corner of our systems. You know, going back to healthcare for a minute. Why are Black mothers dying at a rate 2 to 6 times higher than white mothers postpartum? Why are Black men getting diagnosed with colon cancer at younger and younger ages? We need answers to those things. And we have to look through the prism of addressing, you know, systemic racism in healthcare, in education, in our housing, it's small businesses. You know, we've got to have people who are committed to, number one, recognizing that it's there, and then working with our Black and Brown community members to figure out exactly what needs to be, you know, what's helpful, what can move us forward, and then doing it. And I'm committed to doing that. And I've been trying to hold roundtables and, you know, town halls, whether it's about healthcare inequities, you know, whether it's about small businesses, trying to figure out what we can do to help move our communities forward.
And when I ask that question, I realize that systemic racism, it's almost become a buzzword. And asking it in that way, open-ended, I think is important to be able to see, you know, where candidates recognize where systemic racism exists. Particularly, you mentioned healthcare. We've been talking about the coronavirus. We know that Black people were more impacted by the coronavirus. So I do think that that's important to point out. I want to talk specifically, however, now about a little more in depth about police reform. And Congressman Davis did co-sponsor a bill that was called the Justice Act. It appeared to be something that, you know, what you support, it seemed as though the Justice Act kind of touched on those things. Is that an area where you two agree? If you were in Congressman Davis's position, would you have been a yes on the Justice Act?
I would have to read the legislation that he's talking about. I can tell you that, you know, for me, what I, you know, from what I'm hearing from people around Central Illinois, what's important is we need to make sure that there's accountability in our law enforcement, that, you know, that we do have, you know, we need to require implicit bias training, and we do need crisis intervention training. And we also need to go a step further, and we need to make sure that, you know, things like banning chokeholds, that, you know, that we do enforce that. And we can, you know, we can do all of those things. And again, it's a, you know, it's a first step.
So moving on to a different topic, in listening back to this a couple times, I guess one of the questions that I didn't really get a lot of clarity on from the 13th congressional debate held in Champaign had to do with how many campaign donations you had received from groups affiliated with House Speaker Michael Madigan. And I was wondering if you could just clarify that for us right now.
Sure, I'm happy to. I have taken $0 from Speaker Madigan, and Representative Davis knows that. Actually, there was a St. Louis television station, KMOV, just did a fact check on the ad that Representative Davis is continuing to run, and called it false, because I have taken zero money from the speaker or his committees.
What about groups affiliated with the speaker, specifically ComEd?
I have taken no money. Here's the thing. That's Representative Davis has, he uses this to try to deflect from his own donations. Now here's somebody who has taken over $3 million from corporate PACs. He's taken over $200,000 from Big Pharma corporate PACs, and then voted against lowering the cost of prescription drugs. And when it comes to ComEd Exelon, Representative Davis has taken over $60,000 from their corporate PAC, their CEO, and their executives. You know, there is, when we're talking about what's been happening with this bribery scheme, and I've said over and over that anybody who is found to be guilty in this bribery scheme needs to step down immediately. There is an admittedly guilty party here, and that's ComEd Exelon. And Representative Davis took that money while they were bribing politicians to keep rates high here in Illinois. And again, he was just fact-checked on his ad by KMOV, and they identified it as false. Not misleading, false. Because I have taken no money from him.
Well, thank you for letting us know that. Thanks for giving us that clarity. So a different topic. Has to do with college, and specifically college costs. There are many universities in your district, I believe 4 public institutions and a slew of private institutions, many community college districts. And I guess, you know, since Jacqueline and I have graduated, the cost of an undergraduate degree has really gone up. It can be anywhere between $65,000 to over $100,000 for a 4-year degree, and that's without any financial aid. What is your plan for bringing that cost burden down for future Illinoisans who want to get a college education?
You know, first of all, you're talking to a mom with 3 kids, and we didn't space them out real well. So we actually had 3 kids in college at one time. So when you're talking about college costs, you are preaching to the choir here. I still have 1 in school. And we have to address it. And I think that there's a few things that we need to do. You know, now Representative Davis has voted against, you know, things like budget. He's voted for budgets that cut Pell Grants. I'm against that. I actually think that not only do we need to increase Pell Grant funding, but we actually need to make it available year round, so it takes people less time to get their degree. I want to make sure that we're expanding things like public service for student loan forgiveness programs. You know, those programs are in place. They haven't worked out well. And we need to dig in and figure out why they haven't worked out well, because we have such a need for public service here And I think it's a great way for people to pay off any student loans they incur. I also think that we need to make it, you know, we need to be creative here. And there are a few schools who have programs called income share agreements. It's something I'd like for us to look into, but that still is not enough. We need to make sure that we're addressing some of these for-profit colleges that we've got to get them gone. They are wreaking havoc on people's incomes, and they're giving them worthless degrees. We need to deal with that. There's a bill that the House looked at called the College Affordability Bill, and it was where the state creates a pool of money and the federal government assists with that to provide students in state, tuition-free 2 years of community college. I think that's a great step forward. And then we also, while we're doing all of those things, we need to recognize that a four-year degree is not the best path for every person. You know, we need people who are working with their hands, and we need vocational jobs. We need apprenticeships. And we have a lot of those. We have a lot of great opportunities for those, especially here in Central Illinois. But we need to make sure that those are fully funded, and we need to make sure that we are, that we are giving students that pathway too, that we're encouraging it. It's a great pathway to a great life.
So I think finally, this election has really, or this whole season, I should say, this election season, has shown us how divisive politics can get. Not very pretty. I can't wait for November 3rd to be over. I know Jacqueline can't wait either. So going off of that, how are you going to work across the aisle with people who may disagree with you after this whole season of divisiveness? You know, what does that look like should you be elected?
Well, I think it looks like, it looks like jobs I have had throughout my career. I'm a former middle school teacher. I worked at the University of Illinois Springfield. I have been self-employed for years and worked with, various groups. And, the mission is the mission. And you need to find common ground with people to accomplish the mission. Nobody gets anything done by themselves. And so it's about figuring out where you can find common ground. And, one example I use, because it's something that actually that President Trump campaigned on in 2016, was infrastructure. Now, certainly, we can find common ground on improving not just our roads and bridges and waterways, but if COVID has done anything, it has shined a real bright light on the need for broadband in our rural areas, where we literally have students who can't learn. We have small businesses who can't take online orders. They don't have the broadband to support it. Certainly there, we can use that as a starting ground and move forward. And I plan on doing that. I've been able to work with people from all walks of life for, 25 years. And I plan on doing just that when I get to Congress.
All right. Well, thank you so much for this in-depth conversation. It's always nice when we can sit down and actually talk for a while and have, your ideas in long form rather than in soundbite form. So we really appreciate you joining us. As mentioned before, you can listen to this podcast as well as Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan's opponent, Congressman Rodney Davis, online at stlpublicradio.org. For all of our stories, you can also listen on stlpublicradio.org. You can find me on Twitter at DriscollNPR. Eric, how can people follow you on Twitter?
They can find me at Eric D. Schmid, and there's no T at the end of that, so S-C-H-M-I-D.
And as I mentioned, Eric is following this race more closely, so be sure to give him a follow for any updates on Illinois' 13th. Ms. Dirksen-Londrigan, how can people follow you on Twitter or find out more about your campaign online?
Well, on Twitter, you can find us at Betsy, B-E-T-S-Y, for F-O-R-I-L. And you can also go to our website, BetsyDirksenLondrigan.com. We have lots of opportunities for people to sign up to phone bank and to text and to reach out to voters. And we would love to have you on board. And no matter what, to everybody listening, make sure that you vote. Vote early if you can, but just vote.
You heard it here first. Get out and vote. Until next time, so long.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.